quite
unusual.
Hello, and welcome to the Quite Unusual podcast, where the third time is the fucking charm.
It apparently is today. It is a day.
We are your hosts. I'm Noelle.
I'm Nicole.
And we got it figured out this time, people. We restarted. This is our third start.
There's a lot of things happening. I thought that my entire research had just also disappeared. The moment of panic right when we first sat down to record. So, but we're here.
We're recording.
We're recording.
Get used to it.
We got it down now. We had some tech issues, but it's fine. We're fine.
Yeah, it's fine. You know, it's not fine, though.
What's not fine?
This little note that you have in the beginning of the script. That seems very rude.
I'm sorry. Am I outing you for something?
It seems very pointed.
I think
the
world should know, actually.
It's slander is what it is.
It's not slander because this is what happened. I told Noelle.
The note says Noelle hates monkeys.
She does hate monkeys.
I'm afraid of them.
I said, wouldn't it be so cute if we had a... Okay, so it all starts from this. I follow this account on Instagram and it's like Winston the spider monkey. And he's so cute. And he just runs around. And I was like, wouldn't it be so fun to have a spider monkey as a pet? And Noelle was like, ew.
No, okay, well, first of all, slander. You're gaslighting me right now.
I'm not.
How the conversation started, the very first thing that was uttered about this whole topic is we're working next to each other. And Nicole goes, can we get a monkey? And I was like, ew, no.
Yeah, I was like, wouldn't it be so fun if we got a monkey? And then she was like, no. So she hates
monkeys.
Did
I say it like that?
Yeah, you said, nah.
I don't think I did say it like
that. I think you did.
I just believe that maybe monkeys should live where they're from and not in our house.
Well, he like rescues them though.
We're rescuing a monkey.
Yeah, I'm not going to like go to Africa and steal a monkey and bring it back. That's not my intention here.
Okay, remember when I really wanted to get into like owning a bunch of jumping spiders and you were like, oh, no.
No, I said I agreed with you getting a jumping spider. I also think they're cute.
You said no.
No, I said yeah.
Okay, well, we can get a monkey if it's small.
They're small.
If it's a rescue.
And they wear diapers. It's really cute.
I'm not changing no diapers.
I'll change all of the diapers.
Okay. Fine. We can get a monkey. I draw the line at chimpanzees, so I've seen too many horror stories about that.
No, they're going to, like, throw their shit at us.
I'm not getting...
Chimpanzeed?
I'm not getting chimpanzee.
Okay, fine.
We're not doing that.
You heard it here first. Noelle okayed me getting a monkey.
You can get a rescue monkey if it's small and if it doesn't look me in the eye too many times a day.
It's going to.
Fuck. I'm so scared.
Anywho, I also wanted to bring something up before we get into the episode. Mm-hmm. So if you guys remember last episode, Noelle did the triangle shirt waist factory fire. And there was this whole thing where the owners of the factory took out a bunch of insurance policies on their workers. And there was a little bit of a conspiracy as to, well, did they start the fire just because...
We didn't start the fire.
They wanted to get out of the business. And then also they got like, I think it was something like $2.5 million.
It was so much money.
So much money because their workers had died. And then we were asking, well, that's kind of fucked up. Can people, like employers, still do that? Turns out we got several emails and DMs. Turns out they can.
Yeah, it's cool. It's fine. It's cool and fine.
So we were sent an article from Mark F. So thank you for that. And basically this article was from 2010 and it was about how Walmart was being sued for collecting life insurance on their employees.
That seems like such a Walmart thing to do.
Right?
Yeah.
Because I also found another article about Walmart doing the exact same thing in 2006.
This tracks so hard.
And the lawsuit charged that Walmart had no insurable interest in the lives of its rank and file employees.
It's fucked up, man.
We also got an email from Cooper S. confirming that companies still have insurance policies on their workers. But he said that they get away with it by also offering the employee a policy of the same amount.
Wait.
So that makes sense.
Oh, fuck. Which I have insurance. Does my company have an insurance?
Same. And then I got to thinking, wait, does that mean policy on me?
Because I'm going to say this.
Because I also have a life insurance.
You guys know.
With my company.
That we're anti-corporation here at the Quite Neutral Podcast.
Yeah.
Does that mean, because like, they're not going to do something out of the goodness of their hearts.
Well.
You know?
So we also got a DM from Claire T., who used to work in insurance.
Uh-huh.
And she said that they used to be able to do it like all of the time. But now you need an insurable interest in the person. So I guess like if it's a family member, like a co-owner of the company, or if it's like something where like your death would be detrimental to the company. Like
that makes sense.
Which makes sense. But she also said that she believes some companies can still take life insurance on their employees if they can prove, like, a financial loss if a person dies, which is what Walmart was claiming with their employees, stating that they spend millions of dollars each year to recruit and screen and train employees, which is why they consider all of their employees an insurable interest.
Okay, no, actually what you're doing is you're just hiring people to work at your company.
Right.
So I feel like that can't be right. And also I'm so emailing HR and asking this and then definitely getting fired.
Please do. Right. Like
definitely getting disappeared.
The 17-year-old that you like hired to work the cashier, like that's an insurable interest. Don't know if I agree with that. But she also said that some companies make the family a partial beneficiary to get away with it or to not seem like as skeezy about it.
That's still so skeezy, though.
She did also mention that things seem to be more organized now than they were in like the Triangle Shirtwaist Fire days. And insurance companies review every claim. So they will deny claims if it's a company that is like suspiciously doing it and cashing in on like constantly cashing in on dead employees.
Hundreds of thousands.
They
of
do
lives.
Have the right to deny it. So it's really not something that happens now. But I mean, unless the company can figure out a way to trick the insurance company, I mean, I guess it could still happen.
No, no one's evil, Nicole.
So I mean, moral of the story is that yes, companies can still do that.
I think that's insane.
And they are actively being sued because of it.
Let's take out large insurance policies on me and then also the head of hair, Bill.
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 Can we take out insurance policies on our animals? That's another question, I guess.
I mean, no. Life insurance on animals?
Why not? They're people too.
You know what? You're right. Maybe monkeys. So when we get our monkey, can I name the monkey?
What do you want to name him?
Something really cute though. Like something like, do we give it a person name so we can be like, oh, I'm so sorry. We have to take Jeffrey to school today. Jeffrey's a doctor's appointment. You know how it is.
Oh, Jeffrey. Then you can lie to like to your job and be like and pretend you have a kid.
Yeah.
And then be able to just get out of shit because of it.
Yeah. Be like, oh, I had to go buy more diapers for Jeffrey. Here they are.
Because you're not lying. You don't have to say it's a monkey.
No.
You can just say
my idiot son.
Yeah. Because he's not your son.
My idiot son, Jeffrey.
That would be. Yeah, Jeff. But we could come up with a better name.
We'll come up with a better name.
But I do like that idea. But then what if your coworker asks to see a picture of your son?
I will show them. Be like, he has reverse alopecia.
Oh, yeah. He's got, yeah. I mean, that is. He could be like, what, like Wolfman syndrome. I don't know what it's called.
For sure not what it's called. But I know
what you're talking about. When you go to like a circus or like a freak show, they have one in Venice Beach. They have a Wolfman, you know.
I'll look it up. Werewolf syndrome is actually called hypertrichosis. This is our idiot son who has hypertrichosis.
There you go. He's definitely not a monkey.
No. Let's call him, let's call him Franklin.
Franklin.
But then his government name will be Too Fast Too Franklin.
Okay.
That's good, right?
Love it. I love it.
All right. Perfect.
So we're getting a monkey, guys.
We're getting a monkey, you guys. Mazel to us. All right, that's all I have.
All you got?
All right, Edgar, are you ready to tuck into this one?
Ooh, yes, I am, because this is one of my favorite UFO cases, I think, ever.
Ever.
And I was actually inspired to do this case after we were on the Our Strange Skies podcast with Rob.
Shout out to Rob.
Because we reviewed the book Humanoids, and this case was briefly mentioned, and it kind of brought it back up to my attention, and I was like, you know what? This needs to be done. It's been a while since we've done aliens, UFOs, and this one's a must because This case sticks out to me because it is regarded as one of the best examples of a UFO encounter, and it is considered the best documented UFO case on record.
That's me. I can't wait. I know very little about this case.
Really?
I do.
Oh, man.
I mean, I know some. I'm not like the foremost expert on aliens in this room. Mm. So, you know, I like an alien moment, but
like an alien
for sure.
Well, then I guess we should just get into it because it's great. And also for those of you who don't believe, this case should be a case that like makes you kind of believe.
I'm going to assume every single person listening to this show believes. Right now does believe.
I would hope so.
That aliens are real.
Yeah. Or like something's out there, you know?
Yeah.
Okay, so our story starts off with a man named Lonnie Zamora.
Great name.
Lonnie Zamora was a 30-year-old police officer in Socorro, New Mexico. Lonnie was known to be a quiet man, the type who kept his head down and did his job. Lonnie was respected in the community, and he was also a veteran of the Korean War. Socorro was also known to be a quiet town, not much excitement happening. That is until our friend Lonnie experienced something one can only dream of. And when I say one, I mean Noelle and I, and probably most of you also listening.
Every single person listening right now. The royal one.
Yeah. So our story starts on a Friday, April 24th, 1964. Around 5:45 p.m., Deputy Marshal Lonnie Zamora was sitting in his cop cruiser when he spots a car full of local teens speeding right on past him, going south on U.S. 85. So Lonnie was on duty. He pulls out on the road and enters into a chase with this car full of meddling teens. And as Lonnie followed, the teens led him away from town and out towards the desert. But while Lonnie was driving, his attention shifted from the teens to what he described as a bluish-orange flame in the distance. And the flame resembled a funnel. It was wider at the bottom and kind of flat at the top, but it was also partially obscured by a hill.
I'm just imagining him, like, chasing teens with, like, he's like shaking his fist and he's like, yeah. God damn you, teen. What is that?
I know. And the teens are like, sick, getaway. Right? I mean, yeah, whatever happened. I mean, those kids were extremely lucky that day. They can thank a UFO, I guess. Lonnie also heard what he called a roar that accompanied this weird flame. And he said that it lasted about 10 seconds. And he claims it was unlike any other sound that he'd heard in the area before. It wasn't a blast. It wasn't an explosion. Instead, he described it as starting off in a high roar and then going to a low roar. So kind of like, but like a roar, I guess. Like, I guess.
That's just the noise I make when I stand up now.
Right?
So, my back. I'm getting old as Jeff.
There was a local military base nearby that Lonnie was aware of. But like I said, there was just something about this noise that just wasn't right. It didn't sound like a jet or anything that would have been coming from the military base. So Lonnie was a little confused and intrigued.
He took off his little sheriff hat.
Bloop.
And he put on his little detective hat.
Bloop.
Yeah.
I'm all about the sound effects.
You are the fucking soundboard of the day. Oh, guys, Nicole put a new sound on here for me.
Yeah, it was a request from Noelle.
It was a last-minute request.
You want to play it, don't
can
you?
Can I just play it? Yes. I just really want to play it really bad. This has nothing to do with the show at all, but Nicole did do this for me, which I'm going to consider another one of my Christmas presents.
She was a fairy.
It's so long.
I love all of the videos on Instagram that have this sound in the back of every video. It's just hilarious. So.
I know. They're so good. Thank you so much for doing this for
me. I approve.
Okay. Sorry to interrupt, but back to the... You're the sound effect queen, so...
Don't worry.
Back to the story.
So the area that Lonnie thought that this flame was coming from was also near a dynamite shed that was owned by the mayor that he was aware of. So he was immediately like, this must be, it must have exploded or something. So he considered that to be a bigger issue than some misbehaving teens.
Yeah.
So he decided to let them go, and he turns his car towards the flame, and he starts heading towards the flame to investigate.
You know when your mayor just owns a casual dynamite shed and you think it may be on fire?
Yes. The local dynamite shed.
It's a private dynamite shed. It is his private stash of dynamite.
Right.
The mayor's private dynamite.
I don't know why a mayor needs a shed of dynamite, but...
What if he gets paid in dynamite?
That was specifically in his contract. That he doesn't want contract. Money. Yeah. He just wants dynamite.
But we're trying to pay you $300,000 a year. Nope, I simply won't be having that.
All I want is dynamite.
I will take one shed full of dynamite per year to use at my discretion.
One shed full?
Also, that's the measurement. One shed full of dynamite.
A shed full. So Lonnie turned off of the main road, and so he turns onto a gravel, this like gravel trail leading uphill. And the hill was very difficult for his cop cruiser to ascend because of how gravelly it was. So it took Lonnie a few tries to make it up this hill. But ultimately, he was able to make it. And what Lonnie saw once he came atop the hill confused him even more.
Remember, he is expecting a burning shed of dynamite. So anything outside of that is going to be confusing.
Right.
Because that. A burning shed of dynamite won't be confusing.
No, I mean, that was perfectly normal for this area and this mayor.
The mayor. See, his term was almost up, so he needed to use all his dynamite. Well, I gotta clear out this shed so I can get my new shed full of dynamite for next year.
It's dynamite time. That's what I picture him saying when he, like, lights it on fire.
Like, it's Morbin time.
Yeah.
It's mightin' time.
It's mightin' time. Initially, Lonnie mistook the object for an overturned car down in the arroyo, which an arroyo is just like a water-carved channel or a gully. It's very common in desert landscapes, and sometimes it fills with water depending on rainfalls and such. But this time of the year, it was dry. So if you can picture this,
it's like a little...
Yeah, kind of like
depression,
a little
next to the road.
A gully, yeah. So Lonnie is on top of this hill looking down. So
into the fern gully.
Into the fern gully. And he sees this weird object. So he's standing at the top of this hill looking down, and he sees the object about 150 yards away. And like I said, he's standing up from the hill, or a mesa is what they also call it. And this was where his car was parked, and he's about 20 feet high, so 150 yards away, 25 feet above. So he's observing all of this, like kind of like bird's eye view, I guess. And as he gets closer, he sees that there are two people near the object, both wearing white coveralls.
White?
Which is another thing that I think we mentioned on Humanoids, is that why do aliens always have coveralls?
I told you why. They it's all like have space, Carhartt sponsorships.
It's space suit. Like, it's like the official wear of space.
Three types of people.
Coveralls.
Love Carhartt coveralls. Okay.
Aliens.
Aliens. That's their biggest market. The lesbian community. And farmers.
Yes.
And, I mean, really... All in all, what is an alien but a farmer?
A lesbian farmer.
But a lesbian farmer.
That's makes complete sense.
It's just, you know.
Lonnie said that they had their backs turned away from him or towards him. So their backs are facing him. And then one of them turned their heads and looks directly at Lonnie.
Like hard eye contact. Like really mean, uncomfortable.
I don't know if you're just making that up.
Unblinking eyes, like a monkey's eyes.
None of the reports said that, so like nobody take that like to heart.
Like a dog's eyes.
Lonnie described the people as having a childlike appearance. He described them as being very small, but he only sees these people briefly before his view is obstructed.
Well, now I'm picturing Snooki.
Snooki in white coveralls.
Snooki in white coveralls, which she would never be caught dead in.
I mean, he didn't see them for very long, so it very well could have been Snooki. Well,
they all had Bumpets.
She wasn't alive, but who knows? Maybe she was.
Maybe she's an alien.
Maybe she's an alien. As Lonnie gets closer, he discovers that this object isn't a car at all. Instead, it's this weird craft, and it's shaped like an egg, and it's standing on four legs. And he describes it as looking like aluminum clay. It was whitish, but it wasn't chrome. So it wasn't like shiny and silver.
If you remember, he drove here expecting to see a shed full of dynamite on fire. Instead, he sees four children in coveralls next to a giant egg.
Yeah. So he's like, what is even happening
right now? That would be unsettling, actually.
And as Lonnie walked closer to the edge of the mesa to get a better look, he hears more sounds. So he hears like 2 to 3 thumping noises, which is later said could have resembled the sound of a door closing. And at this point, Lonnie is about 50 feet from the object. So he has better visibility now. And then he hears the same strange roaring sound once again. But this time he hears it start from low and then goes to high. So it's like,
okay. So like it's powering up, but before it was probably powering
down because it landed.
That makes sense.
He sees the same bluish orange flame emerge from the bottom of the egg craft, and then dust just starts to fly everywhere. And Lonnie thought that the craft was about to explode. You know, he's a Vietnam War vet. He's a police officer. He's like, this thing's
used to sheds of dynamite.
Yeah. He's still got the dynamite in his head. So he thinks it's going to explode. So he throws his body to the ground in anticipation, and he covers his face. Some time goes by, and no explosion occurs. So Lonnie gets up. And he looks again, and he sees that the object is rising straight up from the ground towards the sky. And at this point, it's about level with him, where he is parked with his car on top of the mesa. So still 50 feet away, just now at the same eye level, I guess.
I'm also picturing this moving, like, extremely, like, frustratingly slow. Mm-hmm. And it's just, like, very, like, really, really slowly moving up. And he's like, come on, man. Like, can you just go already? Like, this is fucking annoying.
Well, I mean, you're not wrong. It wasn't very fast because, I mean, he watches it fly away. But spoiler.
Whoa.
Lonnie can see more clearly now. And he sees that there are some strange markings on the side of the object as well. It's about 1 to 3 feet in size. And he sees it's drawn in red, and it's a couple of symbols. There's some dispute about this. There's two different symbols, which we'll talk about a little bit later. But okay. It involves, like, some lines and an inverted V. And this is unlike any symbol that he's seen before. And like I said, we'll talk. There's variations. We'll get into that later.
Usually a V is pointed upwards, but this V was pointed downwards, and I've never seen that before.
How crazy.
It was quite interesting. I was looking for a dynamite shed, and all I found was a little egg with an inverted V.
Why does Lonnie sound like that?
I don't know, because the mayor sounded like that. What do people from New Mexico sound like?
I don't know if I've ever met anybody from New Mexico, so they could sound like that.
They sound like Yosemite Sam. That's the national,
that's the accent
state accent
of New Mexico.
Of New Mexico.
So the object hovers for a little while, and then it takes off due west in a straight line for about 2 miles until Lonnie's view is obstructed by the hilly landscape. So it kind of flies like over the horizon and out of Lonnie's view. Okay. Immediately after the object takes off, Lonnie radios dispatcher Nep Lopez, and that is Nep. That's what the article said. It's not a lightest situation.
It's short for nepotism.
I like literally double checked because I was like, is this Nep or is it supposed to be Ned? Because we don't want a Lytus situation again.
Lydia and Lytus.
That was my bad. I apologize for that. But yeah, it's Nep. Nep Lopez. And Lonnie asks him to look in the sky and see if he sees anything. Unfortunately, Lonnie accidentally tells Lopez to look in the wrong direction. And Lopez obviously doesn't see the object because he's looking wrong way.
Okay.
Lonnie then calls for backup, and Sergeant Sam Chavez, State Policeman Ted Jordan, and Undersheriff James Lucky arrive on the scene.
What a great name.
And Chavez is kind of like the one who's most like mostly involved. Some articles don't even mention the other two.
Okay.
It's mostly just Chavez and Zamora.
Okay.
So together they go down to the scene, and once they're down in the arroyo, they discover burned clumps of grass and also two greasewood bushes that have been also been burned near where Zamora claimed to have seen the craft, which corroborates the story of the bluish-orange flame. Chavez also notes that Zamora seems visibly shaken. He was pale and sweaty, and Chavez tells Zamora that he looks like he's seen the devil, and Zamora responds with, "Well, maybe I have."
It's like, were you watching Cops, or did you just see the devil?
I was watching Cops.
Oh, okay. All right, cool.
That's why I'm so sweaty.
That's why I'm so sweaty. All right, so C and Z are on the case.
Yeah. So upon further investigation, they also note that there are four impressions in the ground, which also match Zamora's account that the egg-shaped craft had 4 feet. And then the men also search Zamora. So they search him to see if he had anything in his possession that could have, one, created this fire, or two, created the impressions in the ground. And they come up empty-handed. He doesn't have anything that could do this.
Besides this flamethrower, he has nothing that would start a fire.
They didn't check his pockets, and he did have dynamite in his pockets.
Took it from the shed.
Yeah. He's been stealing from the shed all along.
No.
Another weird thing that they notice is that they didn't observe any footprints or car tracks besides their own going down to the area. So it would have been impossible for Zamora to stage this thing because you would have seen footprints from the mesa all the way down to the arroyo.
Right.
The men go home, and Zamora talks to his priest about it.
Oh, wow.
And then he reports the incident to the chief of Socorro Police.
So he's, like, super shaken up. If he's, yeah, like, calling Jesus.
It's like, I've never seen anything like this. Chavez reports the incident to the nearby military base, and the FBI in Albuquerque were notified as well. And they are all on the scene. They secure the scene for investigation almost immediately. They're taking samples of the burned earth and the soil for later analysis. But what was also weird about the burned grass was that it was clearly burned by something. And mm-hmm. Zamora had said that he had seen this flame. But when they come down to get the closer look, the areas that looked like they had been burned were cold to the touch.
Whoa.
And they conclude that the burn marks are not that of a jet or a rocket taking off. So it's kind of weird. They're like, they don't know where this flame came from.
Yeah. Also, blue flames are the hottest flame. So, like, that's crazy.
So they had the hottest flame.
They had the hottest
flame. Maybe that's
flame.
Why it was cold at the touch.
Oh, my God.
I don't know.
That makes perfect sense. Hot flame, cool touch. Duh.
They also use a Geiger counter, and the Geiger counter reports no unusual radiation in the area. So there's none of that going on. And in a mere 2 hours since the first initial sighting, Agent Arthur Burns from the FBI and Captain Holder, who was the commander of the nearby military base at White Sands, they're on the scene. They have it all secured. So, like, they're taking this seriously. It's not just like, oh, this guy saw something. Like,
yeah.
They're investigating this as if it's a UFO.
This is also their names are giving, like, Mully. Woo! It's given X-Files. Scully and Mulder. Burns and Holder.
And they, too, note the 4 marks in the dirt, and they measure them. And these marks are 8 inches by 12 inches. Each of them are 3 to 4 inches deep, and they're kind of in, like, a weird rectangle, like an uneven rectangle kind of formation.
Like a rhombus, possibly? Maybe like a trapezoid?
Yeah, totally. I don't know. So what they do is they put stones around the indentations to just kind of mark them. But they also indicate 2 smaller indentations between 2 of the 4 feet indentations, which they believe were indentations from a ladder.
everyone listening to this, I need you to rewind a minute and then take a shot every time Nicole says indentation.
Indentation.
Because now we're just going to say it. We're just slipping in. So
you got a couple more coming. So, but if you can picture this craft, it's like this egg.
Mm-hmm.
It's got the four legs. It's mm-hmm. got like the door that opens and then the ladder comes out.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the little guys crawl out. Like,
it makes perfect sense.
Typical.
It also sounds adorable.
Right.
Like the cutest kind of spaceship, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It does.
It sounds like really cute. I'm also picturing it to be like very small. Well, you said it was small.
Mm-hmm.
And like these little guys are in there and they're like, their outfits match their ride. And like, it's just so cute.
There are also some reports of smaller footprints being noted around the area. But it's unclear if those were there before they got there or if they were from the crew that they brought to investigate. Because if you remember, Zamora and Chavez didn't really note any footprints, but Zamora did report seeing two people. So it would make sense that they would find these tiny little footprints.
So, again, adorable. Just so cute.
So they come to the conclusion that there was clearly something here. Something left these marks. It burned the earth. And Captain Holder confirms that there were no projects going on at the time. And that the military was not responsible for this sighting. He's like, this craft isn't ours. Also, the craft that Lonnie described was unlike anything the military had at this point. It's not any kind of shape that they even really had at the military base.
Oh, they don't have egg-shaped planes?
No.
What? Crazy. Oh, we're only working on the fried eggs right now. We don't have any hard boils in stock.
No hard boils here. There are some who believe that it actually was just a secret military project that they kept under wraps, but then why would they keep it a secret so long? And then why would they waste time and resources continuing an investigation?
Yeah, right. Like, they could have just gaslit Lonnie into being like, oh, Lonnie.
It was us.
That's wild.
The military also confirmed that they did not spot anything strange or anything that resembled the craft on their radar that day. So this is when things get turned over to our favorite military project, Project Blue Book.
I love it. What year is this, by the way?
1964.
Okay. Great year.
Great year.
Great year.
And if you're not familiar with Project Blue Book, we've talked about it a little before, but basically Project Blue Book was a government task force created in 1952 whose entire job was to just basically study UFOs.
How fun would that have been?
Right?
Yeah.
Their job was to research any UFO and kind of really ultimately decide if these UFOs were a threat to our national security. Because if you remember around this time, the world was sort of in like a UFO panic.
Yeah.
We had Roswell, we had Betty and Barney Hill. People were just going nuts for UFOs and aliens at this time.
They were going cuckoo.
Cuckoo for UFO.
Yeah, that was good.
Project Blue Book was active from 1952 to 1969.
Nice.
And this was 1964, so things were sort of wrapping up in that department.
Mm.
They only had four men, a part of the force, and it was all led by a man named Hector Quintanilla. And he would also be the last chief officer of Project Blue Book. That is, if they actually did end Project Blue Book, or maybe they just call it something else now and don't tell us. Which I would, you know, they have to have something.
They definitely have, you know, something.
Like something.
I'm going to say they have several somethings. We spend $800 billion a year on our defense budget,
yeah,
which is more than everything else combined.
Right.
They definitely have a minimum of two different alien departments.
Or like two different agents. A minimum of two agents named Agent Scully and Agent Mulder.
Yeah.
That are investigating these things.
But it's spelled slightly different.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like Scully.
Scolder and Mully.
Scolder and Mully. That makes perfect sense.
Weirdly enough, Project Blue Book had one of their officers already in the area.
Huh.
Sergeant Moody.
Don't get on his bad side.
He was stationed at Kirtland Air Force Base, and he was working on a completely different case. So he was called over because he was just close. So he was called over to come and interview Zamora. Sergeant Moody from Project Blue Book and Major Connor, who was a member of the Kirtland Air Force Base.
Kirkland. It's sponsored by Costco, actually.
No, it's actually Kirtland. I do love Kirkland, though. They have some quality products.
This was a Kirkland brand Air Force Base.
So the two of them come over and they interview Zamora. And they come to the conclusion that he was not lying and that this was not a hoax perpetrated by Zamora. They did not believe that he hallucinated the event either because Zamora didn't drink and he was a reliable person. He was a police officer.
Yeah. So what, he stole dynamite sometimes. Okay. That does not make him a bad man.
Yeah. And I mean, at this time, people trusted police officers too.
So. They did.
And then comes our boy, J. Allen Hynek.
Big fan.
He was not a part of Project Blue Book, but he was an advisor.
He did own a blue book.
Once.
He had one once.
And he was just kind of like an overall badass UFO researcher. Like, we stand for J. Allen Hynek.
We do.
Did I use that right? That we stand?
Yeah, everyone's definitely still saying we stand.
I don't.
No, I'm. Everyone's saying it. You
I'm
did
a
it
millennial.
Good.
I don't
you
know.
Did it.
I had
you
to
did
ask.
It. You did it.
He is also known for developing the close encounter scale. So, you know, like the close encounter of the first, second, third kind, so on. And I don't know if we've ever mentioned this, but he's from Chicago.
That's right.
Hometown boy.
That's right. Heinie's Hynek came from here.
Heinie's Hynek.
Wait, Hynek's Heinie?
Hynek's Heinie came
Hynek's
from
Heinie is
Shiny.
Homegrown from Shiny.
Also, just a little fun fact about him. Because of his close encounter scale, he was brought on as a consultant to the film, the amazing film, Close Encounters of the Third Kind, which is fantastic. And if you haven't seen it, please watch it. Do yourself a favor. But he also has a little cameo in the movie at the end.
Does he?
Yeah. So as the mothership departs, spoiler alert, if you haven't seen it, it came out a long ass time ago and you should have already seen it. Okay.
You're not spoiling a super old movie.
But as the mothership departs, J. Allen Hynek can be seen with his beard and his pipe in his hand, or in his mouth, stepping forward to witness the extraordinary sight.
Wow.
So yeah, just a little fun fact for you guys.
That is a fun fact.
For all you movie people.
You want to watch that movie later?
Yeah, I would watch that movie anytime anyone asked me to. So Hynek arrived at the scene 5 days later on the 29th. And he actually got there a little late because on his way over, he had gotten a flat tire. And he actually had to hitchhike the rest of the way to Socorro.
That's amazing.
Isn't that?
Yeah, it's kind of a cool. Like back when it wasn't as dangerous. Well,
not for men. I feel like it's always been dangerous for women. But yeah. For men, it was just like chill.
Yeah. And like if you're the crazy person in the car and you're the one spouting off about aliens yeah. and shit. And like you really seem like you know what you're talking about.
No one's going to want to murder
you. You would be so safe. Yeah. You're going to be fine.
So by the time he gets there, Lonnie is already completely over this whole thing. He doesn't want to talk about it anymore. He's getting interview requests left and right from different UFO groups and different journalists and stuff like that. But Chavez convinces him, and then the two agree to meet Hynek at the site. And by the time Hynek gets there, the site has been just so trampled by UFO enthusiasts that there were really no samples that were able to be obtained by him, which is kind of sad. But they did take some. Samples were collected, and they were tested.
Oh, okay.
A radiological, is that how we're saying that word? A radiological chemist claimed to have tested these samples. And she concluded that the brush, the vegetation that she tested, mm-hmm. had been burnt, but she did not detect any propellant. Mm-hmm. And she also noted that the samples were dry, like weirdly dry.
Oh, how interesting. So mm-hmm. they were cold, and then they were also like zapped of all of their moisture.
Yeah.
Moisture.
So I don't know if that's like a...
How interesting.
Yeah, like ice.
Like a cold. What if it's like cold fusion or something?
It's something like that.
I don't know. I'm not a science guy.
Me neither.
We are trying to get a scientist on the show, though. So.
She also reported that there were two substances found on the samples that she could not identify.
And then also some dynamite residue. Just some. But that's just in the air there.
She's like, everyone breathes it constantly.
You're all a little explosive because you live near the shed.
But the U.S. Air Force apparently intervened and they confiscated all of her notes and all the materials. And they told her to not discuss the matter any further. There is some speculation as if this is true or not. But if the government truly did intervene, we're not going to know.
No,
so
we're never going to know.
It's her word against theirs. And honestly, I believe her over the government.
Nicole,
so.
The government would never lie to you.
Sure, Jan.
Never.
On April 30th, the local newspaper, The Chieftain, comes out with the headline, Air Force consultant checks UFO site here. Dr. Hynek feels Zamora's account solid, not a hoax. And then several other people come forward claiming that they also heard this loud roaring sound around the same time that Zamora claimed to have seen this object.
Okay, what did that sound like?
Which one, the high to low or low to high?
I think we need both. Go high to low first. Okay, and then what would the low to
low
high sound
to
like?
High is.
I just need everyone to know that when Nicole does that, she physically goes, her body goes from high to low.
I'm not even trying to do that.
It's incredible.
Natural.
She's
a natural thing.
She's incredible. She's a whole body actor.
But there was another person who claimed to have seen the same object as Zamora, though this person, unfortunately, has never been located. I know.
Ooh.
But a local man named... You ready for this name?
I'm really excited.
Opal Grinder.
Shut the fuck up.
He was the source of this report. And
Opal Grinder?
Yeah. So he managed a Whiting Brothers service station located on US 85 North. And he claimed that a tourist had stopped in and had reported seeing something similar the same day as Lonnie.
Opal Grinder.
Opal. Good old Opal.
Wow.
You gotta trust a man with a name like that, you know?
I would. I bet he plays a banjo, too.
Ding, 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 ding.
God, you are the fucking sound effects queen today. I love it.
The man apparently reported seeing a funny-looking helicopter, if that's what it was, he says. And he said it was flying low and that it flew over his car as he was traveling north on US 85, which is the same road that Lonnie was traveling on when he was chasing those kids.
And you can trust us because we are a geography podcast.
Yes, we are. So he says that he witnessed it fly towards the gully. He saw it land. And funny enough, he also says that he saw a police car heading up the hill.
Oh.
So he witnessed all of this.
That's amazing because he is confirming that Lonnie was also there.
Right.
Wow. Oh, I love this. He's like watching it in third person.
I mean, if he exists, I like to believe he does. I like to believe that Opal is not a liar because like he kind of came out with this after the fact. So he could be a liar.
You know what, though? He probably changed his name. That's why he like didn't want to get found. So he's like, oh, I got to pick a name.
And he settled on Opal Grinder.
Well, yeah, his name was Granite Smasher. So he's like, what's something really different than my name?
Kind of the same.
What's the opposite of granite? Opals. What's the opposite of grinding? Smashing.
So at the time, Opal thought nothing of it until Zamora's account was publicized. And the government and Project Blue Book determined that Zamora had witnessed some object, given the indentations, take a shot, in the soil, but they were leaning more so on the side that it was a terrestrial object and some sort of test that the military was responsible for. But the only problem with that was that there were no projects that they were aware of that were operating at this time.
I'm so surprised they weren't like, that was a weather balloon.
Right. Oh, well, we'll get to that point.
Okay.
There are a few of those.
Also, Opal just sees the weirdest shit ever. So he's like, yeah, I've seen that guy all the time. The only thing I thought was weird was that a cop came also. So I didn't think to report it.
I mean, he works at a service station, like kind of in the middle of a desert. So I'm sure he does see some wild shit like constantly.
He definitely does. Right. There's like a skinwalker that like comes in and buys a Coke every other day. And he's just like, what's up, Jerry?
The local skinwalker. named Jerry.
Well, yeah, he was a man at one point, Nicole. Don't be rude.
Some people believe that Sergeant Moody, the Project Blue Book officer who was curiously stationed at a nearby Air Force base just 60 miles away.
Curious.
Some think that he might have known more about this object that he let on.
Yeah, but you don't want to catch him in a bad mood, okay? Which he's just always in. He's like the Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, but he's Sergeant Moody. You got to be careful. You don't know what his attitude's going to be like. Is he in a good Moody duty today? Or no is he knows. Mr. Mean Moody today? You don't know.
He's mean mooding?
He's mean mooding.
So it is a huge coincidence that he was already so close. Like, what are the chances?
Probably extremely high because something was going on.
Was he there already investigating a sighting that may also have something to do with Lonnie Saw? With what Lonnie Saw? I mean, I don't know. Your guess is as good as mine.
I'm probably, honestly.
The project that he was a part of nearby has been partially declassified as Project Cloud Gap.
These names.
I know, right? And at the time, it was a classified project testing nuclear weapons, and they were testing to see if there was a possibility that the Soviets were keeping nuclear weapons and were testing these nuclear weapons underground without being detected. So they were like kind of seeing if this was possible.
Nuclear. It's pronounced.
Did I say it wrong again?
No, I just always like to do that too. I'm sorry.
What is it though? How do I pronounce it?
You can say it either way, I think. Nuclear, nuclear.
Nuclear?
Yeah, I think you can say it either way. It's a tomato-tomato situation.
What did I say though?
You said nuclear.
Nuclear?
You said it the correct way.
Okay, good.
Nuclear.
Nuclear. Nuclear. Whatever.
Oh my God, I'm so sorry.
She does this to me every time, guys. And then I think it's funny. Second guess myself, and then I'm like, I sound stupid.
No, you don't.
Another piece to this puzzle is Sergeant Moody and his somewhat obscuring of the investigation, as some may call it. So remember when I mentioned the symbol that Lonnie had seen on the craft?
It was like a V, but instead of being an upright normal V, it was like a downward facing V, which I've never seen before.
That's an exact quote from Lonnie. Thank you for being here with us. No, just kidding. Lonnie's dead. Sorry. That's a spoiler.
Oh,
I'm so sorry.
God.
So anyways, there are two different symbols that are brought up in this case. One of them is they both have inverted Vs, though. One of them is an inverted V with a vertical line in the middle and a horizontal line at the bottom with a half circle above.
Oh.
The other is described as an inverted V with three horizontal lines through it. And I have
she drew that
a drawing right here for you.
That's really nice. Thank you.
Which I can't show to you guys, but I mean, we will obviously post it.
We'll post it. We're going to post what Nicole drew.
So the reason why there is some debate on which is the true symbol and why there's confusion to what which the true insignia is because of Sergeant Moody.
Mm.
So he told Zamora to describe an incorrect version of the symbol to try to weed out any fake eyewitnesses that may have claimed to have also seen the craft and come forward.
It does make sense.
It does make sense.
It does.
It does. Because of this, no one truly really knows which insignia is correct. Lonnie's wife claims that the half circle symbol is the one that Lonnie saw. And also several other UFO groups agree that that's the true symbol. However, some audio recordings of Nep Lopez, he was the dispatcher that Lonnie called, describe the symbol with three lines. And Hynek also believed that the one with the three horizontal lines going through the inverted V, he believes that one to be the correct one. Project Blue Book, however, uses the half circle in their reports.
Oh, so they use the wrong one.
But no one knows. I mean, I think this is just me personally, and maybe it's just because I'm kind of a little fangirl, but I trust Hynek on this one.
I would also, I feel like he's got a memory for it.
Well, he didn't see it because he wasn't there.
Yeah, but he was told.
Well, this was after Moody had told Lonnie to lie about it.
Oh.
So, yeah, no one really knows the truth.
This is quite confusing.
Yeah. So, but I mean, Hynek says we have when he called, like audio recordings of when Lonnie called in, and mm-hmm. he describes it with the three lines. So that was before Moody, like, instructed him to do this. And also, I'm just going to side with Hynek on everything, I think. So,
yeah, that's safe.
Yeah. But that also begs the question, did Moody purposely throw out this fake symbol to throw people off? Or was it truly just to weed out liars? Like, maybe it was a symbol that the government was using and he didn't want anyone to know.
Ooh.
We don't know.
So he was, like, trying to, like, classify. Maybe he was also trying to gaslight Lonnie into thinking he saw something else.
That is if you're going with the theory that this was a military test that nobody wanted to own up to. Yeah. Which I don't really subscribe to that one. I like to believe it's real.
I want
to
believe.
Real UFO. I believe. So either way, we'll never know, but we do know one thing. For those who claimed it was a government test and that the craft was just indeed one of our own, we've never seen a craft like this ever. Still, to this day.
Yeah.
There is no known aircraft we possess that resembles this weird egg shape. There's also no known craft that is capable of flying in the manner that this craft did. I mean, yes, we have helicopters that can fly vertically and hover, but those machines make a ton of noise.
Yeah, and they have, like, blades and propellers.
Right. And besides the loud roar, presumably, which was the start of the engine mm-hmm. or the stopping of the engine, this craft was virtually silent in flight.
Oh, it was a Tesla.
So
that makes sense.
So, I mean, if it were a government craft, I think we would have publicized this technology by now. Yeah. You know, like, we would be using it.
We would be using it.
Right?
We would be using the silent technology. I mean, we have, like, super quiet planes and stuff now.
Right.
But that's now. That's not in the 60s.
Well, none that hover in this way, though. That's and, like, true. Have this weird egg shape with, like, no known, like, propeller or anything. It's just, like, kind of floating.
It sounds so cute. I can't get over it. Just like a little, like, balloon.
Kind of. I mean, yeah. Another thing about Moody was that he and Hynek did not get along very well. Despite being a member of Project Blue Book, Moody was not really a believer. And as we know, Hynek was.
So this was just a paycheck to you, Moody? Is that all this was?
Hynek also criticized Project Blue Book's handling of the case, as they deemed that the object was just like some experimental aircraft, even though they knew that that wasn't true. He believed it was just something that they went with to keep Congress from bothering the Air Force.
Mm.
And Hynek also states this case as being a significant case in making him a true believer.
I like that there's multiple witnesses. Mm-hmm. There's witnesses that saw other witnesses,
yeah,
which is very interesting to me. And then, I mean, honestly, this little egg. Like, two people saw this little egg, dude.
I think the, yeah, and, like, for this one, it's like,
how do you not believe this?
The proof is in the pudding, and the pudding is, like, the soil and the grass and, like,
right,
all of these things that Lonnie is saying he saw, they all, like, forensically match.
Yeah, like, it all tracked, and they had three other people
mm-hmm.
check it out, like, the minute that it happened.
Yeah.
I think it makes a lot of sense,
there wasn't, too. Yeah, there wasn't any, like, time for people to come in and trample the area before authorities got mm-hmm. there. Like, they secured the scene almost right away.
Yeah, Lonnie did the right thing, man.
So, several skeptics, they always come forward, don't they? They're always going
to. They love to do it.
If you have a UFO, they will come.
Skeptics going to skepticize.
So, they've come forward with a lot of different explanations as to what Zamora really saw that day. Some believe that what Zamora saw was just a mirage of the star Canopus.
No.
Which, for those of you that don't know, it's just like a really bright star in the sky.
Yeah, but it never falls to the earth in the shape of an egg with men coming out of it.
No! So. This explanation is just completely stupid and a stretch at best. But it is used in several UFO cases, like, as an explanation. It's basically the weather balloon's cousin, like, when it comes to skeptics being like, it's this instead.
Oh, it's just a star. Happens sometimes.
Right?
Like, just a casual.
Like, as if people don't know the difference between a star and a goddamn UFO.
It's just a star. It's fine. It's cool. It's whatever.
Well, right. And the problem with this theory is if what Lonnie saw was just a mirage, then how do you explain the indentations in the soil or the burned brush that they literally took samples of?
Right.
Like, I don't think a mirage burns the earth, nor do I think it makes physical marks.
No, mirages don't typically have weight to them. Like, they're not going to, like, trample some
They don't
brush.
Have weight either.
No, weight or weight.
Weight or weight. Another theory perpetrated by Philip J. Klass was that Lonnie's encounter was just an entire hoax. But
what?
Klass did this all of the time. He was just a huge known skeptic and kind of just asshole when it came to UFO phenomena. He believed that this was all set up as a hoax to promote tourism.
I don't think so.
And his investigation led him to, and quote, unequivocally characterize the case as a hoax, end quote.
That's so boring.
But we know Lonnie was a respectable man. He was a police officer. He was a veteran.
Didn't even drink.
Didn't even drink.
His only vice was eating dynamite. Okay.
He just stealing. He was a klepto, but only for dynamite.
Only he's cuckoo for dynamite.
And every single person who interviewed Lonnie deemed him incapable of creating a hoax.
That's so mean too, though. It's like, oh, good old Lonnie. Nope, he's not only too nice, but also too stupid to ever come up with a hoax like this.
Well, and also, Lonnie didn't want anything to do with it after he, you know, told the police chief that this happened.
Yeah.
So if he was trying to do a hoax, don't you think he'd kind of, like, be in on, like, all of the, like, interviews and, like, yes, and I was there and, like, you know,
yeah,
showboating around?
He literally did his job. He reported what he saw, and then he fucking went home.
And then he's like, I don't want any of this anymore. I don't want this attention. Get away from me.
Yeah, and Opal saw it also. So
Opal talked to a guy who saw it.
Opal's cousin's friend's uncle saw it.
It was just a random tourist who we have never, has never been confirmed. So he's out there somewhere, maybe. Maybe he's still alive.
Granite Smasher.
Another theory presented by skeptic Robert Schaefer.
Schaefer.
It's just even dumber than Philip J. Klass's theory. He believed that it, too, was a hoax. But he believed that it was a hoax perpetrated by local students, college students.
Sure, of course.
Who wanted to get back at Zamora.
Obviously.
And perform a sick prank on him.
That is a detailed prank.
Not sure how local college students would have the capability of even making the craft, let alone somehow maneuvering it to fly in a way that we still don't even have the capability of doing. But sure, go on, Robert.
They were theater kids.
Oh.
They're set design.
You know what? Yeah,
set design. One of them had like a funnel that he made. He was like, or whatever the noise was. I don't remember it.
They made the indentations and then they ran away. But then they tied brooms to the back of their butts. So it swept away their foot.
And they wiggled their butts really hard as they ran away. Yeah, that makes perfect sense. I think that they were theater kids. I like this one.
You're going to go with Robert Schaefer's? Schaefer's?
Why are you saying it like you're from the Black Lodge? Because
it's spelled like that. It's like, it's not Schaefer, it's like Schaefer. Also, I don't like his theory, so I'm making fun of his name. If you must. No.
Okay, well then that actually does track.
And this theory does change Zamora from an active participant in the hoax to a victim of the hoax, which does fit more with what we know about his character, but still. The logistics of performing the hoax, especially being done by college students, just doesn't add up.
Also, like, they just let it fly into the sky and then what?
Right.
It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, especially they're freaking college students. You think college students want to spend their time making a fake UFO to get back at an officer, officer?
Right, and all of their, like, extra income that's just burning a hole in their pockets, they use it to make a beautifully, like, shaped white egg.
They really went all out.
This was their magnum opus. Their magnum opal.
Another weird part of this, though, is that the president of New Mexico Tech, which is apparently the college in which these children went to and created this hoax from, I guess.
Sure, of course.
So the president of this college Sterling Colgate.
Okay.
Of, which sounds like a toothpaste.
Of toothpaste fame.
Claimed,
the heir to the toothpaste fortune.
Right. Claimed that this idea was in fact true and that his students were responsible for the hoax.
Okay, go brush your teeth, Colgate. Right. Like, what do you...
However, he claimed that the object Zamora saw was just a candle in a balloon, and it wasn't sophisticated at all. But then, once again, how do you explain the indentations and the figures with coveralls?
They borrowed the coveralls from a farmer. Okay.
A lesbian farmer.
Well, obviously, don't be ridiculous, Nicole.
Another theory was that Lonnie had just witnessed the testing of a lunar landing device. And a project that was conducted by the nearby White Sands Missile Range. However, no one has claimed responsibility for this, and there were no known testings being done in this area at that time.
I do also kind of feel like if they were, like, doing this and this was a government craft, mm-hmm. they'd be like, Lonnie, look, is this what you saw? And he'd be like, right. Yep, there it is.
Like, why would they lie about it? Like, don't you think the government would want to debunk it?
Also, he's a cop, so, like... He's one of them, if you will. I mean, yeah, obviously not as high ranking, yeah. But like, he's not just some dude. Like, they're not right. being like, hey, Opal, come take a look at this equipment. No, for sure. Like, he's kind of a more trustworthy person.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like if that had been the case, they would have just showed it to him.
Right.
For sure.
Right. After the incident, Lonnie Zamora's life changed forever. He was ridiculed by the public. He even stopped talking about the incident and would later just completely refuse to mention it or talk about it at all. He did not seek fame from this encounter. He wanted nothing to do with it.
Right, because it was real. Right. If it was a hoax, why wouldn't he keep going?
Yeah, he would have, like, monetized it for sure.
You know what I'm thinking of right now?
What?
Remember the Balloon Boy hoax?
Yeah.
And he was just, like, in the attic.
Man,
the
we
got to
do, like, I don't know, maybe a bonus episode or something on
Balloon
that.
Boy. I was obsessed. I'm still kind of deeply obsessed with Balloon Boy, actually. Wonder yeah. how he is.
Wasn't he just, like, in an attic?
He was just hiding in the attic the whole time.
That's the funniest part about that, I think.
They got in so much trouble for that.
So he didn't seek any fame. It was actually quite the opposite of that. But due to the ridicule and the teasing that he received from his local community and even members of the police force that he was so dedicated to, this led him to retire from the force just 2 years after the incident.
That's so sad.
I know. Isn't that sad? Lonnie, once a respected and admired man of the community, was now scrutinized, and a lot of people thought he was lying.
Lying Lonnie.
Lonnie avoided the Air Force and ufologists that would come and seek any information from him.
Mm-hmm.
And he eventually found work managing a gas station in town.
With Opal.
Sadly, on November 2nd, 2009, Lonnie Zamora passed away from a heart attack at the age of 76 in Socorro, New Mexico. To this day, Lonnie's encounter remains one of the most documented UFO cases in the history of UFO cases in the U.S. The CIA's evaluation of the case was disclosed via the Freedom of Information Act, and in it, they acknowledge Zamora's credibility, and they agree that the nature of the case is just unexplainable.
So they believe him, it seems like.
They don't say it's a UFO. They just say it's, we don't know right. what the hell it is.
It appears to be some sort of object of unidentifiable means
right.
that seemed to have also fly, but we're not calling it a UFO.
No, it's just unexplainable. Project Blue Book officially listed the case as unknown and unexplained and stated that the incident was due to natural events and that they couldn't identify what Zamora witnessed, as there was no known technology at the time that could explain what he saw.
Natural events. Of course. I like that explanation. It's just a natural.
Yeah.
It's like a natural it's woman, like they, a natural event.
It's literally like they don't want to say UFO.
Well, of course, because then that confirms that UFOs are real.
Exactly.
But now, I mean, oh man, Lonnie, I wish you were alive now.
I know.
You would have lived for this shit.
Feel
that's
so
going
bad
on.
For him.
Right?
J. Allen Hynek reported the incident as evidence of a real phenomenon of undetermined origin.
Ooh.
And because of this explanation, or because of this unexplainable incident and Zamora's credibility, this case remains a source of fascination and continues to ignite conversations among individuals with an interest in researching unidentified aerial phenomena. Major Hector Quintanilla wrote, and this is a quote, "There is no doubt that Lonnie Zamora saw an object which left quite an impression on him. There is also no question about Zamora's reliability. He is a serious police officer, a pillar of his church, a man well-versed in recognizing airborne vehicles in the area. He is puzzled by what he saw, and frankly, so are we." This is the best documented case on record.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's cool. I like that. I mean, Lonnie seems like a stand-up guy, dude.
I know. In 1966, Paul Ridings, the president of Socorro County's Chamber of Commerce, suggested developing the location of Zamora's reported UFO encounter for better accessibility to tourists.
Oh, okay. Well, that's problematic, though.
So in the end, they kind of did use it
for tourism, yeah.
Like a tourism thing. But
yeah.
I mean, if it's the site of a UFO, people are going to want to see it.
Oh, for sure.
So I would go.
Yeah.
Subsequently, stone walkways and steps were constructed from the mesa top into the arroyo with a rock pathway encircling the presumed landing site featuring wooden benches. So they like had this all set up. However, these amenities were placed about a quarter mile away from the actual like site, Zamora's designated sighting spot, due to local rumors of radioactivity contamination at the original site.
That's interesting. I wonder why there's rumors of this.
I know, because remember, they used the Geiger counter, yeah, and there wasn't any radiation.
Yeah.
So in 2012, Socorro city officials Ravi Bhaskar and Pat Salome commissioned local artist Erica Burley to create a mural on a spillway facing Park Street commemorating Zamora's UFO sighting.
He would have hated that, I bet.
I know.
He definitely would have.
That's the only
that.
Thing where I'm like, ah.
He would not have liked that. I'm so sure.
Thank God he's passed away, though, before like that happened.
Yeah.
He probably definitely would have not liked that. But
for sure.
I mean, it's kind of like a memory
I think it's
of him.
Nice.
I think it's nice. And despite the teasing and ridicule from the community, Lonnie has never wavered in his accounts of what he saw that day in 1964. If they want to believe me, good. If they don't want to believe me, it's all right too, said Lonnie.
What a gentleman.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
And that's all I got for you.
That's beautiful. I found his real name also.
Who?
Lonnie. I was looking up. Lonnie's a nickname. I was looking up where he's buried.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. His name is Dionisio Edward Lonnie Zamora.
Aww.
It's beautiful. I'm picturing him as being like so just adorable. This is amazing.
Yeah. He just seems like a really nice guy. And
just like a dude like living his life.
Yeah.
For sure.
And it always like happened, like experiences and UFOs always happen to the people who don't want them to.
Yeah. If you want it, you can't be desperate.
No. Yeah. It doesn't happen.
You got to play hard to get, man.
It doesn't happen for us. It'll never happen for us.
See, I don't want it, so it will happen to me. And then I'll be
like, kind of want it, though.
You know what?
We have matching UFO tattoos. You want it.
I could go for an abduction.
Yeah.
I could leave the planet.
Right.
I got nothing here.
I think
I'd be like, can we get Nicole? Can we, for 1 second?
You better.
Can we round up the girls? That's going to take a minute.
Yeah, we need the animals to come with us.
Obviously. We're all going to go.
Yeah.
We're all going to go. And we're going to ascend to the sound of...
She was a fairy.
That's the noise that's made when you ascend in a UFO.
In a UFO.
Yeah, that's a fact. That's a fact right there. So, well, that was fun. That was a good story. And I believe it.
I believe it, too.
I totally believe him. I'm so interested about this cold fire situation, too. If anyone understands what that means, write to us at quiteunusualpod@gmail.com. Also, if you guys have
alien technology, why would anyone know?
Maybe there's an alien that's listening.
Oh, okay. Well, that makes sense.
I don't know. We don't know who everyone that listens to us
is. True. Maybe they picked up this transmission somehow.
Yeah. If you're out there, if you're listening, just let us know. Okay.
He's like, yes, I will email you guys.
That would be really nice. I would really enjoy that. He like has to go to a public library though to email us because like right. they don't have that technology for some reason. They only have interspace technology.
Yeah.
For sure. That was really fun. I want to do a little shout out. If anyone has any UFO cases that they want us to cover, let us know because there are plenty out there. Mm-hmm. So write to us at Quite Unusual.
There's a lot we haven't hit. But UFO cases are weird too because they're some of them are so hard to research.
Yeah.
So, and I wonder why.
Oh, I wonder. Oh, I wonder.
You can follow us on all the social medias, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Not Blue Sky.
We're on Blue Sky.
No, we're not. No, we're not.
Yes, we are. We're definitely on Blue Sky.
We also have a Patreon.
And we also would like to welcome back Kelsey C to the coven.
Welcome. And as always, remember to celebrate the strange.
And while you're at it, keep it unusual.
Bye.
And this is the part of the show where we give praise to the cult leaders, the all-knowing supporters of the podcast, and all-around benevolent beings.
To Tim M., who recently found a pod of melonhead cryptids while walking in the woods. They've accepted him as one of their own, even though he has a decidedly normal-sized head.
It's fine. It's fine. KGT, an avid poker player, just joined a weekly game night hosted by the Flatwoods Monster. Other guests include Mothman, of course, Indrid Cold, obviously, and just some dude named Brad who honestly brings the best snacks.
Mm. Brad sounds like he would bring the best snacks.
He's always walking in, I got the pretzels. It's great. Fantastic.
Here comes Brad with the pretzels. Adam K., can't eat green jello without crying about the lost love of his life. The blob. I get it, Adam. Breakups are hard.
Maybe switch to blue jello. I don't know. John S., who is so superstitious, he has decided to buy an entire pet rabbit, just in case a single rabbit's foot wasn't lucky enough. 4 times the luck, 100% less animal cruelty.
I like that idea. Caitlin R. makes her living as a secret supply runner to Hollow Earth. Those goblins can't get enough of Fig Newtons and McDonald's Diet Coke. The superior Diet Coke.
The superior Newton as well. Lexi C. is pretty sure that pop rocks are actually a naturally occurring mineral on the moon, and she's decided to dedicate her life to proving it.
Jeff S., a scientist that is terrified someone will find out that crunch bars actually contain little pieces of moon rock to make them so crunchy. He decided to start a rumor that pop rocks come from the moon to throw people off the truth.
Oh, well.
Oh.
Maybe we shouldn't have.
Wait.
Told both of those things at once.
Oops.
Oh, well. Lenore M., who has decided to invite the aliens that keep landing on her lawn inside for some tea. She has a feeling that they're just a little too shy to abduct her.
Justin W. recently saw what he believes to be a new type of centaur, but instead of half human and half horse, this one appeared to be half dog and half cat. Or maybe it was just a chihuahua. He's actually not sure.
He's questioning it at this point. Molly M., an incredible psychic medium who uses litter to read people's futures. Whatever they throw out onto the street, Molly picks up and delivers with the news. You'll either throw this away, or a great tragedy will befall you. If they ignore her, if they choose the tragedy, she punches them. Incredible psychic abilities.
Honestly, I do the exact same thing. Tom W. invented the first ever time travel device. No one has seen him since.
I love that view, Tom.
Thank you to all of our Coven members on Patreon. Without you, we are nothing.
We are just simply screaming into the void. screaming into the pink microphones that sit atop our desk, screaming into the darkness alone. We're not even worthy of anyone listening to us, honestly.
No, truly.
We're not. We're nothing without you listening to us.